Welcome back to the second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only.
Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with your host, Pete Talbot, along with Dr. Samara Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you an opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here's your host of Leading Edge Medicine, Pete Talbot.
Hey, this is going to be a great hour. Actually, our fourth hour of radio this morning,
right?
Which is a reminder. If you would like to know where we are for all 4 hours, starting at 8 o'clock, you simply go to our website, lmclinic.com, lmclinic.com, and you push on the podcast button at the top right-hand side of the page, and all 4 hours will be listed out. In fact, starting next week, we'll also list out Beautiful You with Dr. Samara Umat. This is a brand new show about a month ago. We're actually doing our fifth show this afternoon. We'll do it live this afternoon at 1 o'clock, from 1 to 2 o'clock. On a different station, but you can find us. And which is Beautiful You is sponsored by Bella Medica, which is our aesthetic division at Longevity. So lots of reasons to keep listening to the radio today. In walked Dr. Michael Gilbert, but he did not come alone. He came with gifts. He came with gifts. And even though, I'll tell you, Michael, you hang on for just a moment. We'll talk about your generosity here in a minute. But we have Mike.
We have Mike still on the phone.
All right. Yeah.
So let us continue with Mike, and then I'll introduce officially Dr. Gilbert.
There is one other factor that we haven't discussed that affects your free testosterone level, and that is dehydrotestosterone. Dihydrotestosterone is kind of, if you'll excuse the pun, testosterone on steroids. It is the more active form of the steroid hormone testosterone. And you men convert some degree of the testosterone to dihydrotestosterone. Now, if you're using a testosterone supplement and if you're applying it to your skin, skin converts testosterone to dihydrotestosterone. And the more of it you convert, the lower your free testosterone number will be, and yet you will have very potent androgen effect from the dihydrotestosterone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can't just say, gee, my free testosterone is low, I'm in trouble, because if you're making enough of the dihydro,
my DHT is low, it's at 11. And okay. I see the ideal is 30 to 50. Is 11 right. In 2017 and 11 in 2019. Right. So I don't know what's going on there.
Well, yeah, that is lower than I'm shooting for. So probably you're tying a lot of your testosterone up in your sex hormone binding globulin, and mm-hmm. so you're not able to metabolize it efficiently.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And so one of the first things we would usually try in the clinic would be raising your boron.
Mm-hmm.
And boron as a supplement will often
fail. 1 6-milligram capsule per day. Also take Chrysin and stinging nettle.
Yeah.
Capsules. So maybe is that 6-milligram capsule, maybe yeah. I could double that.
Kick that to at least 12. Okay, 12 or 18 is where most people start to see a significant drop in binding globulin. Okay? We'll see where you go.
Thanks,
all
right, Mike.
Well, thank you very much.
You're
good
welcome.
Call.
So take care.
Thank you
luck, Mike.
For calling in. And with that in mind, we've got Dr. Michael Gilbert from Northwest Vision Institute, a regular guest here for darn good reasons. But let me just encourage you to call in with your questions for Dr. Gilbert. Actually, any question doesn't have to be for him because we've got three doctors.
We have a great team.
Indeed, we do.
Answering almost any question short of politics.
Yeah, well, sometimes this guy over here on my left. Yeah,
I've been known to delve into that region.
My staff starts furrowing their brow if I mention it's. They give me looks. Oh, it's painful.
Oh, yes.
Really, well, you've got too many millennials on your staff.
It's true enough. I easily offend. I offend the staff before I offend the patients.
I have told far more jokes that have offended my millennial staff.
The bottom line, however, we're glad to hear, Michael. But you maybe we didn't mention this here on 570 KVI, but yesterday was Dr. Mixon's birthday.
Yes, it was.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday to me. Happy birthday to me.
That's enough, Jerry. That's enough. Right. And to that end, I was you had known that from previous, just because you're friends, that it was his birthday. So you prance in here with gifts for all.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Michael does not prance. He strode in a manly
manner. Frankly, at my size, it's a little hard to prance.
I can't believe I said the word prance.
It would be a sight, actually. Yeah.
That's right. But Michael and I stride confidently, don't we?
In any event, bearing gifts. So go ahead. Tell our listeners what you brought there.
Without adding advertisements, I had a patient one time who was so grateful for a small miracle we pulled off. A very difficult to treat infection. Had seen multiple other doctors. We turned it around, and once he was totally recovered, he brought in a box of hot chocolate chip walnut-infused cookies.
Ooh.
And he insisted I try them while they were hot. And, of course, I have patients waiting, and this was pre-pandemic. And I said, you know, I thank you so kindly, but I have to see patients. And he said, no, 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 no. So at the fear of being tackled, I took a piece, and I said, oh, that's very good. Maybe I'll finish this. And I stole a minute from the next series of patients who had to wait while I consumed and licked my lips on this cookie, which is the cookie at Metropolitan Market. So free advertising.
And they are wonderful.
They are Belgian chocolate. And
and they're not little, okay? They are giant.
It's a
cookies.
Small meal.
The cookie. At Metropolitan.
And it's warm out of the oven this morning, kept warm, so that chocolate is just, never mind.
Yeah. Whenever I have bought these, a few of them through the years. And, you know, if I go through a Metropolitan Market, to buy coffee, you've got to stand there, and they're just right to your left.
Yes.
And you have to sit and just stare, because once you've had one, you will crave and lust after the others, I promise you.
I hate to mention it, because the reason I was a few minutes late is the line for both the coffee and the cookie was much longer than I expected, but I was not going out. You know, I was undeterred. I was to have my cookies.
That's right. All right. So now, Metropolitan Market, we will expect some sort
of cookie. There better be free cookies here in the future.
That's right. We insist on free cookies to compensate us.
I fear I've just increased the line.
You know full well, if I go to them, I can get free cookies.
Good. I'll be looking for that.
I'll be in line behind you then.
Okay. Well, no, I'll say you want some coverage because I'm not kidding you. I don't like chocolate chip cookies generally.
Oh.
I'm an oatmeal cookie guy with raisin and lots of walnuts. I just took one bite.
Yes, yes, sir.
It was the freaking
best. They are wonderful.
It'll make you a convert.
Golly. I think it's the nuts and all my stars.
Yeah, I know. I don't know what their formula is, but it's wonderful.
And by the way, dark chocolate. To try and bring this all back. Dark chocolate.
Right.
I want to remind you, and the omegas in the nuts are all, this is practically a health food.
Yes.
And I just want to be clear. Otherwise, I would not have brought it in on a longevity morning.
Good for you. Yeah,
thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael.
Designed
he
to,
brought Hostess Twinkies a week ago.
I did not.
Okay.
Right. Way too much fun.
It's just silliness out of control. Okay, now all serious.
Do we have somebody who wants a medical question answered?
Yes, and there is no way to rope it back, is there?
Yes, we shall try. Let's all pray right now. Okay, let's go to Tacoma and talk with John. John, welcome to the show.
Morning. I just first want to let you know I'm a member of the club. I turn 73 next Thursday.
Well, hey. Good for you. Thank you.
So my issue is that, I've had 8 different cancers, and several of them have been skin cancers, including melanoma. So I get a checkup at the dermatologist.
Yes, I'm glad.
I did a full body a couple of weeks ago. Uh-huh. And basically, since I started taking my mushroom pills, all of the crusties and the cherry things are falling off, and I'm feeling really good on that kind of thing. And so I didn't find really anything on the body. We got up to the face, and at some point he said, well, I really want to freeze you about 18 times, and I want to do a biopsy. And it sounded like another doctor who was just trying to get over 15. And so I said, maybe later. And so I got a second opinion, which, of course, doesn't guarantee success. But he looked at the spot where the biopsy was supposed to be, and he said, well, that's really not – doesn't need a biopsy. And he looked at a whole bunch of other spots, and basically because of the pills, I just sort of scratch them and the bumps pop off. And he said, well, I can't tell what's going on unless you wait for 2 weeks. So the 2 weeks is over next week, and I go and see him. I haven't been scratching. Right. And he said we might do freezing, or there's the ointment that makes your skin turn dead and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
And then I said, I remember hearing from your show that there was at least one other thing, and Dr. Umat might know 20, that are less intense than that. So I was just wondering what those might be.
Okay. Well, I am suspecting that what you're having to do is referring to is an inguinal mepubate, which is a immune modulator. But it instead of most of the immune modulators we use for arthritis, this one actually triggers an intense immune reaction of abnormal tissues. And if you simply apply it where there is an actinic keratosis or a skin cancer, you get a great big flare. It turns red. The tissue dies. You end up with a little hole where the cancer used to be. And then it heals in over the next several weeks, and it's just plain gone. I had a little squamous cell on the left side of my forehead several years ago, and I didn't feel like having the biopsies and the Mohs surgery and all of that. So I just went and got the little cream. Comes in a little tiny packet, and I just touched it lightly 2 mornings in a row, and the whole thing just died and healed in, and I don't even have a scar where it used to be.
Yeah, but Jerry, I wonder about melanomas.
Well,
right?
Melanomas are different.
And that's a totally different
No, it is, issue. You know, it is not recommended for melanomas. Melanomas are much more dangerous. You know, if you got basal cells or small squamous cells, I'm perfectly happy with that. But, melanoma is a very, very dangerous cancer. It spreads early. It spreads widely. And, you really have to go after it aggressively.
Yeah, these guys aren't melanoma. I had one of those, but that's not what these guys are.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, if you're looking at actinic keratosis, which is a precancerous lesion, or a basal cell or a little squamous cell, then, I'm perfectly happy to try the inguinal mebubate up front. And it works the vast majority of the time.
Okay. Well, that's what I wanted to know.
Okay.
Thanks, John.
You're
appreciate
welcome,
the call.
Sir.
There you go. Well, it is time for a break. And when we come back, again, we've got a special visitor who came bearing gifts. And I just tried to take a bite of another gift. I got chocolate all freaking all over myself. My fingers. It was a warm. It's a warm cookie. Anyway, it's wonderful. when we come back, we'll talk with Charlie, who has a question about macular degeneration. And Kathy from Bremerton has a question about black spots in her vision. And so there's a lot of reasons why you want to come back. Bobby from Kirkland has a question. Paul from Renton has a question about balancing and how important is being able to balance if you're not able to balance well. Lots of reasons to stick around. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine right here on 570 KVI. We'll be right back.
I definitely would recommend that people attend a seminar. It was a great overview of what he does, but the real results are in the program, and that speaks for itself. The results came almost immediately, and they've been getting better and better.
All right, we got all the lines full, so this song is appropriate. Don't hang up. All right, let's go to Charlie. Charlie, welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Hey, good morning, you doctors and to Pete.
Good morning, Charlie.
Yeah, hey, Charlie, I got a question for you. Are you on a speakerphone?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, we need you not on the speakerphone.
Use the handphone.
Always use it. All listeners, thank you so much.
I'll try that.
Yeah, thank you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you. Go ahead. What's your question?
Oh, wait a minute. See, I can't hear you. okay, wait a minute. I got to do something here. Let me go like this and go like this. How about
go
now?
This way.
Sure. Yeah, we're okay. Fine. Go ahead. Sorry to create a problem. It's just hard to hear you normally, but we can hear you now. What's your question?
My question is to Dr. Gilbert. Is it possible to cure macular degeneration?
Well, I think we have to define cure. You can stabilize it or do everything you can to stabilize it, but no, there's no reversing the structural changes in the retina to what you and I would call a cure. So once you have the diagnosis is initially made only by an ophthalmologist or qualified person to look at the retina and determine that you have some structural changes before there are vision changes. And I think that's such an important point. The changes of macular degeneration are detected before you start to change your vision. You don't want to wait until it's changing your vision and say, and come in. When you are at that stage, there are nutritional there are some big NIH studies, and that's your tax dollars, big NIH studies that have shown that certain combinations of vitamins, called the AREDS2 vitamin combination, that can greatly statistically decrease the risk of progression, but it doesn't cure it. Similarly, that's for earlier stages. If it goes on to dry macular degeneration, where there's some early loss of vision, or wet, where there's rapid loss of vision, there are ways to treat it. But again, not reverse it and not, quote, cure it. So I think the best we can do is stabilize. We're getting better and better at that with each passing year. But it's not something we can cure and not something we can reverse.
I see. So I met a lady last night, and she says she has to pay like $7,600 a month for a shot because of what she has, the macular degeneration. Is that possible?
Okay, well, that's wet macular degeneration, and the treatment for that has evolved enormously over the last 5, 10, even 20 years. Years ago, they used to just take a laser and try and kill off that rapidly degenerating area because it was sort of like a cancer in that it grows very fast and it's very destructive. So killing it was the best we could do. Now we have these medications, and they work, they're vascular, anti-vascular growth factors. And they range in price to about $1,500, $2,000 a dose, but then you have to have it injected in your eye. I think $7,000 is more than I would expect, unless you're talking just about what bill goes into the insurance. Almost certainly, it can be done for much, much less than that. The least expensive drug in that class is one that was not designed for the eye, was actually designed for breast cancer, but has shown to be and every bit as effective for many people, and it can cost $100 a dose instead of a couple thousand. Now, that doesn't mean one is better than the other in a particular individual. So while many people will start with that less expensive drug, some are totally dependent on the more custom design, the more designer drugs that are literally $1,000 a month, at least for a while. But that can go on for some time.
Well, the problem there is $1,000 of that is the drug.
Yes.
And the rest is the doctor's injection.
Exactly.
And a $6,000 for the injection is steeper than most of us would be comfortable with.
Right. Now, that, you know, I'm a government-controlled utility. For Medicare, Medicare sets our fees. So they make sure that there is no great profiteering in this. So I guarantee the rate that is agreed to by Medicare is much less than that, even for the most sophisticated drugs. However, she's has no insurance and is paying cash, although $7,000 surprises me. I'd suggest maybe she check with a couple of retina specialists. We have a retina specialist. I cannot conceive that it costs that much, even if she's paying cash.
Well, yeah, no, she says she has to keep working because her insurance actually covers that cost. And but so I'm just going to let this woman know about you. The other thing is, what is it with the eyes? You know, my mother worked in the hospital over 50 years ago, and they used to have eyes, I guess they took out of cadavers, and they were in the freezer. I mean, I've never met anyone.
Corneas.
For the corneas?
Probably for the corneas.
Well, true transplant tissue can't be frozen. It has to be preserved, and there's a certain length of time. However, that tissue, which is not eligible for transplantation, can be frozen and used for research. And so in my earlier days, I did a lot of research. And so while we did some of that research on pig's eyes that had been slaughtered, one of the things that we did for those, you know, to have the best data, we would use human donated tissue. And, you know, that's where when someone passes away, the family is asked, would you donate tissue? And they don't really ask what the options are for that. The eye bank has to decide whether that tissue is prime for transplantation. And there are many different techniques for transplantation. So not everyone's cornea is ideal for a transplant. Those that are not go to basic research to further transplantation and other eye surgeries. So the ones that, although I guarantee that would not be something that you'd see in today's hospital, they're immediately harvested by trained people from the eye bank, taken to the eye bank, processed for either immediate transplantation, or they're assigned to waiting researchers who use that tissue. So you would not find in a freezer in any hospital in the United States eyeballs sitting there.
Okay. No, I don't. I'm not sure it was in the freezer. But thank you for answering my questions. And I know there's other callers. And thank all of you. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Charlie.
Bye-bye. Hey, thanks so much, Charlie. Yeah, let's sneak in another one here. Let's go to Bremerton and talk to Kathy. Hey, Kathy, welcome.
Hi, Pete. You said to the other person to turn his speakerphone off, but I tried that and I can't hear you at all. So can you hear me now? Okay. Am I all right?
Because
I
have we're good.
Yeah, we're all right. Go ahead.
You're close enough. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear about the no cure for the macular degeneration. I don't know if I'm at that realm yet, but what my problem is that I've always had little floaters. They're little black ones, and then some tiny gray, lint-like ones, and then sometimes tiny lights and black spots that spin at the lower outer edges of my vision. And but recently, in the past like 6 months, I have these bigger black things that are very dark when I open my eyes in the morning. One on the left is shaped like a hat, kind of. The other one is shaped like, on the right, like a chandelier. And then after I have my eyes open a while, they go away. But they're always there every morning.
And they're moving around. So. Right.
No, they just
so what's, there. Well, the fact that you see them in the morning and they are no longer there later in the day, they have probably shifted a little bit. The eye acts like a camera, and the light is coming through and is focused just on a relatively small percentage of the total retina. Now, when you wake up, your head has been flat on the pillow, presumably. You've been, you know, facing toward the ceiling. So by gravity, those little specks and spots can shift their position, especially the more dense ones. So when you wake up, they're toward the center. As you become more erect for a higher percentage of the day, they will, by gravity, shift into that part of the back of the eye that is not receiving light and processing light. So they kind of hide from you. And that's why most people who experience floaters, and floaters is the generic term we use for both the little pepper dots, the lint flecks, sometimes they're kind of clouds that move in. Just as generic nomenclature, we call those all floaters because they do literally float. And by gravity, they'll tend to settle out. The only so two critical points of this. Number one, anytime you have new floaters, then it's extremely important that you get that checked out, because anytime there's change in that gel in the back of the eye, manifest by either flashes of light or floaters, there's a chance, not a trivial chance, that it could be the beginning, the sign of a macular, macular degeneration, no, a sign of a retinal tear, which can lead to a retinal detachment. So extremely important to get it checked out, okay? Number two, the only real reason that can be, quote, cured, a word we used just a few moments ago, the only way we can get rid of those is to do what I flippantly call an oil change. If we put probes into the back of the eye, take out all of that gel with the optical aberrations, dots and commas and lint and what have you, those are just cells getting in the way of the optics. Change out that fluid. Once it's changed out, most likely you stop generating new ones, and we've cleared that space, including your little hat and such like. Once it's gone, it should stay gone. However, that's a serious surgery. There is, and we sometimes will do, depending on the individual, there's a laser technology that can laser some of those floaters. And if you have a lot, especially the clouds, then that's not the kind that's really amenable to laser very easily. However, there are certain reasons why you can have the kind that are shaped like circles or a hat and things like that, and that is more amenable to laser. So it's certainly possible that some of those could be reduced. If you've not been checked out, I think it would be a good idea to have someone look around the periphery, make certain there's no damage to the periphery, because that's safety point number one. And then number two, it's reasonable to ask the question, if these are bothersome, what low-risk steps can be taken to reduce or eliminate them?
I see. Okay, then. They came on after I had watched a lot of videos on my cell phone.
I believe those videos probably rot your brain, they do nothing to your eyes. All right, and I obviously I'm joking. I apologize to Netflix and all those others who might sponsor the program. But seriously, actually staring at your screens, all screen time, can do permanent damage to the gland system, but no damage to the retina, no damage to the floaters, will not influence those at all. In fact, action, not inaction, is more likely to cause those shifts in floaters, which is to say, looking back and forth, actively using your eyes. But there's nothing you need worry about in terms of action or inaction.
So there you go, Kathy.
Well, what about a natural thing like supplements and things like that? Can I get
I know of
there without doing
I know
surgery?
Of I know of no supplements that have shown the ability to decrease those. They are free-floating in that posterior gel. I look forward to the day when we have such an answer. We don't have that today.
Thanks, Kathy. And that opens up a line. We've got Dr. Michael Gilbert, as you have been hearing, from Northwest Vision Institute. We've also got Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat. So anything goes. Call us if you've got a question at 1-888-312-5757. 1-888-312-5757. Don't go too far.
They called you about the health analysis that I took a year ago. I went to the Linwood office, and I must tell you, your staff is so amazing. At Longevity, they talk to you. They make you understand what's going on, and they give you the numbers so you have a starting point. And that's what I love about coming to you guys.
All right, 36 minutes past the hour, we've got Dr. Michael Gilbert. Kind of a surprise visit today. He even brought gifts. That's always nice. We're going to have you back even more frequently.
Oh, perfect.
There is now a requirement.
You're talking like the Cookie Monster.
That's right.
Cookie.
Let us go to Ken in Gig Harbor. Ken, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello, Ken.
I have a question for Dr. Gilbert, and it has to do with RLE, refractive lens exchange. So I'm wondering why he doesn't use the new Panoptics lens.
There are competitors. Each of the companies in the United States is trying to convince both the doctors and the public that they have the best lens technology. And I like the Panoptics. I think it has some advantages. In fact, compared to the one that I lean toward for those people who want an extended range of vision, and the RLE, just for those who aren't in on the current jargon, RLE stands for refractive lens exchange. And those are the people over 50 who wish they had had LASIK. But now, when they go in for that LASIK evaluation, they find that LASIK will only give them distance vision. And what they really want is to get the LASIK quality distance vision, but also want to be able to give up that requirement for picking up reading glasses every time they look at either a computer or something close. And so RLE takes advantage of leaps in our technology, of implant technology. What's failing from age 40 on, slowly, this dysfunctional lens syndrome, where first we lose reading, then we lose computer, then we lose distance, and oftentimes it gets just a little bit worse, and those are the people who say, darn, is there a way to stop this? And the stop is to replace that failing lens with one of the new technology implants. And there are both accommodative and multifocal technologies, and the Panoptics falls into that multifocal. The advantage of the multifocal that you're talking about, the Panoptics, is it has a little greater range than the adjacent technology, which is called extended depth of focus. And there's only one manufacturer of what's called extended depth of focus in the United States, and that lens technology has superior distance and superior optics, but may not give you quite as near without glasses. It's near, but it's not as near as some people prefer. But the cost of having that additional near with the Panoptics is, at least on bench tests, an increase in the aberrations, the side effects. So each company has their competing studies that say their product is superior. I look very closely at the neutral parties who have done their optical research. Right now, I lean toward the alternate technology and typically combine it with one with a a sibling lens with the Symphony extended depth of focus that gives you that same range as the Panoptics, but with net superior optics for distance and for typically the side effects for night driving. So I fear we get a little bit into the weeds of why I like one over the other. I will tell you the very, very short of it, in where I should have started, patient satisfaction. In my entire practice lifetime, which I choke a little bit in reporting that's 30 years, but in my entire surgical lifetime, I have never had patients so consistently happy with their distance, with their intermediate, and yes, their near vision, as I have with the current generation extended depth of focus lens. So while I have nothing ill to say about the Panoptics, if I were choosing it for my family, for myself, for my patients, right now, the extended depth of focus lens. And, of course, all the manufacturers around the world are working to try and equal that technology and make it better yet. So the best news is we keep getting evolutionary changes in this technology. Today, for me, for my patients, I'm very happy with the results I get with what I believe is the optically superior extended depth of focus. But I have nothing to say against the Panoptic Super Lens bench studies, a little superior distance and side effects with the Symphony.
Ken, I hope that helps. Anything else?
I just wondered what the side effects might be. And is it an option if we came to your clinic?
Sure. I am more than capable of doing doing Panoptics. It's an excellent lens. And we talk about the advantages and the disadvantages. The aberrations, the side effects. So you get distance, you get intermediate, you get near. The one interesting side effects about these technologies is some people, important star footnote to that, some people will at night, when looking at a point source of light like a street lamp, see either a subtle halo or maybe a more impressive halo or some digital pattern. When I say some people, many people don't see it. So it's a brain processing issue. And what that means is many of those people who do see it, it will gradually diminish over time. And some, it will persist. And right now, we have no ability for any of those technologies, Panoptics or others, to determine whether that's going to, whether you're going to see it. I know an eye surgeon in Seattle who had that last year. About this time, he says he's never seen it. His patients have. He has not. So it's hard to predict. It is impossible to predict whether you're going to have any such aberrations and how rapidly they diminish, if they diminish. But I have never, in the years I've been using these technologies, and I've been using these technologies and their predecessors over 20 years, I've never had someone ask me to remove the current generation because of those aberrations, mainly because they do not want to give up the benefits, which is to say the intermediate and near vision. When I demonstrate what the trade is, they are unwilling to give it up. Plus, other footnote, there are no implants approved by the FDA that don't have a small percentage of patients that have those same aberrations. It's just that they're a little bit more common, and again, likely due to brain processing, you have new eyes. And the brain takes a little while to get to adapt and come to grips with that new data flow coming in and processing it.
Ken, I hope that helps.
Great.
There
you
go.
Thank you very much.
You betcha. And let me just point out, old Jerry, you have a comment.
I just say, well, he brought up, though, an interesting comment, which was remove and presumably replace the lens.
Right. Yes, exactly.
And how practical is that? If somebody has one and they say, you know, this lens is giving me X, Y, or Z problem, I'd like to do the other one instead.
First of all, you have to see how severe the symptoms are and have we given it time to resolve.
Sure.
But yeah, we can exchange implants.
All right.
The only thing is, as an important footnote that I also always share at this point, exchanging an implant is slightly higher risk than doing the cataract surgery in the first
initially,
place.
Sure.
So making sure we have it right the first time is the most important step. And that's perhaps one of the reasons we've never exchanged.
And talking about lenses here, there's multiple lenses
no
to
question.
Choose from.
Yeah. And with each few years, one leapfrogs the other. In my brother, in Jerry, we have the accommodative lens.
Yep.
And it's superb, but not quite as predictable. Not everyone has the great muscle tone that Jerry has. So oftentimes, getting the near vision component, people have to work at that, and they aren't as successful as Jerry is without glasses. And so the advantage of the alternate technologies we were just talking about is it's built into the implant rather than through the muscular engagement with the lens. But there are many of my patients who we still use that, so it's still excellent for the right patient.
Excellent to hear. All right. We've got to go to a break. We're a little past due. But when we come back, we'll take a few more calls. I've got Dr. Michael Gilbert. I've got Dr. Samira Umat, Dr. Jerry Mixon. When we come back, we'll talk with Bobby in Kirkland, who has a question, and Paul in Renton about balance. So don't go far. We'll be right back.
I'm in the longevity program in Lynnwood with Dr. Armstrong, and I'm very happy. And one of the things I realized why it's being very successful for me is that I feel like I have a personal coach.
The night was clear and the moon was yellow and the leaves came tumbling down. I was standing on the corner when I heard my bulldog bark. He was barking at the two men who were gambling
in the dark.
They're all dancing here.
And Billy, two boys who were gambling. Stagger Lee, he threw seven. Billy swore that he threw eight.
Everybody loves Pat Boone, right? Or am I just a nut?
Yep. Oh, no, I love Pat Boone.
Those are not mutually exclusive.
Well, good. I had dinner in his home about 2 weeks ago in Beverly Hills. He's got more stories than you can freaking shake a stick at. He is hilarious, sharp as a tack at 86. Anyway, let's get back to some calls here. Kirkland is where we're headed. And Bobby, welcome to the show.
Hi. I'm calling to ask a couple basic, I think, food questions. And wondering why so many nutritionists will say that we shouldn't eat lunch meat. I know about nitrate and nitrites. But anyway, is lunch meat really bad for us? And then also about gluten, that gluten cuts off the nutrition, allowing it to get into our intestines. I'm in my low 80s, so, you know, the food I eat is real important.
Okay. Well, let's touch on that quickly. Right. Everybody has a different degree of sensitivity to almost everything.
Mm-hmm.
The preserved meats, whether they be, you know, your bologna or your sausages or your ham or yes, the nitrate, nitrite, question has been pretty well solved, and that is there is an increased risk of colon cancer with both the preserved meats and the charred fresh meats. So, you know, barbecuing, much as we love the taste of that crispy crust on the outside of the meat, that is probably our highest risk for colon cancer. So that's the downside.
Okay. But salami, so that would be
Yeah, all of the cured meats.
Bologna.
They all increase risk of, okay. of gastrointestinal
How about
cancer,
turkey lunch meat?
Well, again, it depends if it's how it's preserved. If it's just, you know, cooked, sliced turkey that's refrigerated and kept, you know, nice and clean, you have no problem. It's the preservatives we put into the meats that are causing the problem.
And how about gluten, Dr. Mixon?
Well, again, gluten, some people are very sensitive to gluten mm-hmm. levels, and other people are not. You know, I mean, I have eaten high gluten, high protein breads most of my life and mm-hmm. never had an issue.
Yeah.
So, I love the stuff personally. Mm-hmm. But in fact, when I was a young man and poor and my wife was grinding our own wheat to make bread, we would buy 50 pounds of high gluten winter wheat to make our breads. And, you know, so if you got a gut like mine, enjoy it, honey. But there are people that don't tolerate it well. And, you know, they can indeed develop a leaky gut syndrome in which they actually get porous and proteins get into the lining of the bowel and cause an inflammatory reaction. And they can have all kinds of issues.
Yeah. You know, people go ahead.
Would somebody know, now, I don't live too far from the Juanita Beach. Can somebody come down there to make an appointment for your testing, your free tests now?
Well, not right now because there's no one in the clinic. Yeah. We're closed on Saturday.
If somebody could come down there and make one of these free testing and we'd learn some of these things about what our body will tolerate.
Okay, the initial free test does not involve gluten sensitivity. Okay, that's a very specialized test that we do on people that are already patients. So we don't offer that to the general public. If you came down, if you ended up becoming a patient, we could offer you that test. But we don't just offer a range of testing to the general public, I fear.
But, you know, if you're in your low 80s, you've enjoyed gluten all your life, and you don't have any other problems, I don't think it's an issue. It's only if you are having problems that have arisen over the course of time and you suspect food allergies, that's when, you know, that's a problem and you have to address it.
That's right. You know, it's one of those things that I heard an 80-some-year-old one time said, ain't kill me yet, ain't going to kill me now.
How about root vegetables like yams and sweet potatoes? Are those better for you than...
I love yams and sweet potatoes, yes.
They're better than potatoes, yes.
And some one nutritionist I heard say we shouldn't eat any of the nightshade things like tomatoes and potatoes and such. And I thought, well, I should check into that. I don't eat much tomatoes any, but I love little gold steamed potatoes. They're just wonderful.
They haven't killed you by your mid-80s. They aren't going to kill you now. Enjoy them.
Yes.
You got to remember, my function as a aging specialist doctor, my job is to help you have a long, robust, enjoyable life. Not to make you so miserable you pray for an early death, okay? So, you know, enjoy your life. Don't let the naysayers get you so worried that it takes all the joy out of life. You've gone a long way, and if you're doing well, you just keep on doing well.
And it seems like sometimes authors and writers will maybe have a personal issue with the food, and they'll make it improper for everybody.
And they make a lot of money criticizing what other people are doing and are having no problem with.
Yeah. So with that, we got to... Yeah. Thank you, Bobby.
Oops.
Just, are you still there, Bobby?
Yes. Can I make a question about eyes?
Sure. Hello? Go ahead there.
We have the eye doctor right here.
Go ahead.
There was one eye doctor in there a few months ago, and he said people going could definitely have no symptoms and be going blind. And I thought, wow, I've carried that around with me for weeks. Is that true?
So that eye doctor was me. and I don't think it was an exact quote. So let me make sure that if that was your takeaway, that we correct it. There are many people who have the beginnings of eye disease that can cause blindness, and yet they do not have a change in their vision, or at least they haven't detected it. And both are true, which is to say, you can have the beginnings of a blinding disease and not notice it, but it's detectable on exam. and you can have the beginnings of a blinding disease, and it is taking away vision. You have not yet picked it up. So it can be before there's change in your vision, or there may be early changes you haven't detected. And both of those situations can be consistent with the earliest your earliest phases of several blinding conditions, glaucoma, macular degeneration, diabetic eye disease, many that I can come up with. And I think with enthusiasm, I was asked to come up with some, and we rattled those off and cautioned how important those eye exams are early before you have changes in the vision, because many of those diseases can
You're
end
in
up
the Bellevue
with permanent
area,
change.
Right?
Yes, ma'am. Bellevue and Totem Lake. We have two offices.
All right. Thank you, doctors, for your wonderful advice.
You're very kind. Thank you.
Thank you, Bobby. Well, that was a long caller. She had several questions. And I'm glad it ended up with you, Dr. Michael Gilbert, with Northwest Vision Institute. Let me just say, Dr. Gilbert is in the studio today for a darn good reason. Because he is on the leading edge. As one of the people who've called in here before, she had been to another ophthalmologist, and she said it seemed like old school compared to what you do. And it's very, very true. So there you go. Ho. If you would like to make an appointment with Dr. Gilbert at Northwest Vision Institute, simply give his office a call at 425-450-2020. That's 425-450-2020. And you can also make an appointment at nwvision.com. But so, Michael, thanks for being here, and thanks for the cookies.
Thank you.
That's wonderful. Going to enjoy those cookies. And for the rest of you, if you would like one of those few free health analysis appointments, you can get your own by going to lmclinic.com. We have a limited number of them through September. Go to lmclinic.com, lmclinic.com. We'll see you next weekend. Have a wonderful rest of your day.